after encouraging us to walk away from our country, to participate in a relationship with him, after asking us to walk away from our societal conditions into which we were raised so that we can enjoy a personal relationship with our Creator, Yahweh went on to say, "And I will choose to genuinely and consistently work through you, Asha, for the purpose of continually increasing and magnifying, La Godal, people from different races and places, Goyim." This is Bereshith, Genesis 12:2. So here in the Torah, after asking Abraham to walk away from his country, just as he is asking us if we wish to participate in the same covenant, to walk away from ours, and to disassociate from societal customs, and to leave the family of man so that we can become part of Yahweh's family, the next statement that he issues is that if we are willing to do so, that God will work through us, will work with us, and he's doing this for the purpose of continually increasing and magnifying people from different races and places. Like a father, his interest is in his children and making them better, enriching them, empowering them. So there's a couple three profound insights here. The first of those is that Yahweh chooses to work with and through individuals. Always flawed individuals, never perfect ones. Always ordinary individuals, never politicized or religious individuals. Ordinary, flawed people is who he chooses to work through. Now, some of those individuals become quite famous. Abraham, Dode, Moshe. But they started off fairly ordinary. You know, Dode was cowering in a cave. Moshe was tending sheep over in Arabia. They start off, you know, pretty ordinary. It's just that over time they become extraordinary. Abraham was just an ordinary fellow living in Ur. So God chooses to work with us and through us because that's the purpose. That's the intent, after all, is to engage in relationships with individuals. Because when God adopts us into his family, he's in a position to do all the things that parents can do with their children, which is to enjoy their relationship with them by providing for them. Now, this was written as Asa. Asa means I want to perform what needs to be done with you. I will go out. I will, of my own volition, God is saying, actually and continuously engage with you and consistently act through you. This was written in the call stem, imperfect conjugation, cohortative mood. Now, what all that means is, and we should never ignore this when we're trying to communicate a Hebrew text, is the call stem speaks of that which needs to be interpreted literally, which is genuinely and actually true. So God is saying, for real, genuinely, I want to work through you. The imperfect conjugation speaks of that which is ongoing and unfolding over time. This is not a cut-and-dried issue. If God said, you know, I just want to deal with you, Abraham, and just you, during the duration of your life, it would have been written in the perfect conjugation, which speaks of an open and closed case, something that has a beginning and an end. But he didn't. He described this, and he communicated this in the imperfect conjugation, which tells us that everything he's saying to Abram is going to have an ongoing effect throughout time, unfolding throughout time, continuing throughout time. The cohortative mood speaks of volition. God is saying, this is what I want to do. Now, that's important because when Yosha tells us that we should be concerned, those who wish to enter heaven should act upon the will of the Father. Remember when in the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, Yosha says that those who call him Lord will not enter the kingdom of heaven, but instead those who seek to do the will, who act upon the will of the Father. Well, Here you have both act upon, asa, which means to engage with and act upon, and the will of the Father through the cohortative stem. So if you want to know what the will of the Father is, it's to work through you, is to work with you. And to do what? To increase and magnify you. So I will choose to genuinely and consistently work through you. That's the will of the Father. That's all you need to know about the will of the Father. He wants to work with us, through us. He wants to engage in a relationship with us. He wants to participate with us. And what is the purpose of that participation? Is to continually increase and magnify us. That's from La Gadol. To express my desire to consistently distinguish and elevate, from Gadol. To empower and lift up, to raise children and to help them grow and to do great things. This was written in the Peel Imperfect Cohortative. Ongoing, expressing Yahweh's will. And it was written as La Gadol. And La in Hebrews, the primary meaning of La as a preposition is to move toward, to approach. So God is saying that I want to work through you and I want to approach you so as to increase and magnify you. My very proximity to you is going to do these things, your proximity to me. And he wants to use his relationship and the activity that he's going to engage in with Abram to approach and to increase and to magnify Goyim. That's the third insight that we gain here. This is people from different races and places. Goyim. Now, what's interesting is that God's now is speaking of everybody but Jews in this initial statement. Goyim includes, is the descriptive term used throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to describe those who are not Israelites. And so you might say, well, wait a minute. I thought the covenant was affirmed not only through Abraham, but through his son Yishak, and then through his son Jacob, who Yahweh renamed Israel. And when he comes back to reaffirm his covenant, he is reaffirming his covenant and reconciling his relationship with Israel and with Yehuda, Yehuda being one of the 12 tribes of Israel, of Jacob. But that's like me saying that I wish to offer a really wonderful product to the whole world. And then saying that I'm going to present this product to the world and to establish this relationship with the world, to the world of this product, by working principally through one group of people. And so Yahweh was saying, this covenant that I'm establishing, it's for the whole world. But this covenant is going to be carried out, enacted, described, delineated, and offered to the world through the descendants of Jacob, Israel. These things are not in conflict with one another. They're just a progression of events. They describe the means to accomplish the goal. But the very fact that the first statement here regarding the covenant relationship that's going to be established with Abraham communicates the fact that it is for Goyim, completely destroys this myth of an old covenant with Jews and a new covenant with Gentiles. This is the one and only covenant, my friends, and it's with Gentiles, Goyim. Therefore, there is no purpose for a New Testament. None. It's torn asunder with this comment. Also, this notion that salvation is God's intent, as Christianity portends in their New Testament, that's not what God is saying here. The purpose of all of this, of him acting and engaging with Abraham to create this covenant relationship, the purpose isn't to save. The purpose is to increase and magnify, La Gadol, to distinguish, to elevate. Now, from God's perspective, we are distinguished, we are elevated, we are magnified, we are increased, we are empowered, we are enriched through this process of being adopted into his family. It is becoming his children that we become heirs to all that is God. We inherit all that is his to give. He gives us his power. He provides us with his teaching and guidance. His guidance enriches us. His power, of course, increases and magnifies us. That's the purpose of the covenant. Salvation is simply a byproduct of that. So for those who are wondering, like I, when I drove across the country, I saw all these signs. Are you saved? If you were to die today, do you know where you'd spend eternity? Well, the people asking those questions are missing this. They don't understand what God is saying. The purpose of the covenant is so that God can work with us, can work through us, can engage and act with us. He's, for all eternity, he wants to engage with us. That's what Asha means. He wants to participate with us so that as a loving father, he can enrich and empower his children. And fortunately for those of us who do not have Jewish ancestry, at least that we know, for those like me, and many of you who are listening, I happen to be Sioux Indian and Irish. This relationship is for us. It's for all of us. So, this has God not only doing the work, but working through this individual, Abram. And that is really the nature of everything. You know, God could simply do everything himself and expect nothing for us, but then what good would a relationship would be? If he's not engaging with us, acting through us, doing things with us, then what's the purpose of a relationship? You know why? At that point, we just become a meaningless byproducts of this whole thing. You know, Yahweh has elected to interact with humankind through humans. I am not a prophet. God doesn't give me any special revelations. My whole purpose here is that I've taken the time to closely examine and carefully consider what Yahweh said, and I am simply sharing that with you. Now, therefore, to whatever degree you know we should consider that, Yah is working through an individual, as he loves to do, to share his message. You know, it doesn't take much. I'm plenty flawed. It doesn't take much to be part of God's family. This way that this relationship with Abraham is beginning is the same way that the relationship with all of us through him has begun, by making the story known to the world through the most published book in human history, the Torah. Yahweh, just as he did with Abram, introduces himself to us. He introduces himself through the opening lines of his Torah. And then he makes his will, his intent, known. He is offering to us the ability to participate in a relationship with him, which causes us to be his sons and daughters. We then have the option of saying, yes, we'd like to participate, or no, we don't. We can't change the terms and conditions of the relationship and what it takes to participate. But if we wish to engage, we actually can negotiate with him. We can say, you know, I'm willing to be an active participant in the covenant, but to do so, you know, here's the things that I would like in return. And so long as those things aren't inconsistent with Yah's intent, he'll accommodate. You know, for example, even before I was fully aware of all of the nuances of the terms and conditions of the covenant, and we suffered as a nation 9/11, I heard Yahweh ask me if I would be willing to go off and expose and condemn the religion that caused that great calamity. And I, at the time, knew nothing about Islam. My first response, of course, is, come on, why me? I mean, pick out a scholar, someone who is fluent in Arabic, somebody who's got a PhD in religion, somebody who's an effective writer, a public figure, an academician, you know, pick out somebody with the wherewithal to go off and do this, with the credibility needed to do this. And, you know, you could hear God saying, hey, you ever look at the people that I've used in the past? I'm not looking for somebody with credibility. I'm looking for somebody that knows they have no credibility. You know, I'm not looking for somebody that thinks they can do this on their own. I'm looking for someone that knows that they can't do it on their own. I'm not looking for a perfect individual. I tell you the truth, you know, I'm looking for a flawed one. You qualify. And I said, you know, boy, I'm aware of what Islam does to those who expose it. You know, you spend your lifetime on the run. Look at Salman Rushdie. He wrote a fiction book, a novel about the satanic verses. And, you know, he's been hunted down ever since. The fatwa to kill him. Oh, not so sure that's something I already want to sign up for. He said, okay, well, what are your terms and conditions? You know, Yah has terms and conditions for us to participate in his covenant. He's willing to have us outline terms and conditions to work with him. And I, you know, articulated mine. It's just right off the top of my head. I want my family and my home protected. I'm willing to risk my life. If we're going to work together, that's the least I can do. But I don't want my family and my home to be subject to having to barricade it or to be threatened by these guys if they don't like what we come to learn. And the second thing that I want is that if we're going to do this, then we do it together. And the moment I engage in anything that we do, whether it's writing the book about it, it's going overseas to learn about it, it is doing the research on it, or promoting this message on radio and television, the moment I sense that I am out doing this on my own, using my own capabilities, it's over. And just as clearly as you and I are having this conversation here, God said, yeah, I want you to turn here, and this is the this is my answer. You can read it. But, yeah, I agree with all of that. Happened to be the 91st Psalm that he directed me to, read it, and says, yeah, I'll do all of that for you. And we went out and did it. So God allows you to, if you want to negotiate, if you participate in sharing his message or condemning a message that is opposed to him, to help others understand that they ought not trust and rely upon religion or politics, he's absolutely willing to work with you, through you, and wants to do so. Something for us to consider, all of us. Because I want to tell you, I am nobody special. I have no credentials that would impress anyone. You know, that the only thing that caused me to be in this position is a willingness to do so and a recognition that I was incompetent and that God's proclivity for passionate and flawed people. So if you're flawed like me, passionate like me, if you're willing to acknowledge that you've got no capabilities or qualities that would impress anyone, and you're willing to engage in this relationship with Yahweh, welcome. You too can share his message. Welcome back to Shattering This. There was one job that Yahweh chose to do on his own that he did not do through a working through someone, and that is the job of saving us. It was a byproduct, of course, of the covenant. He did his most important job, which is establishing this relationship through us, and he did a second most important job, which is communicating the terms and conditions and the benefits of this relationship through a flawed individual. That would be Moshe. So Abram and Moshe. He even set Noah up as an exemplar of how the covenant would work. But when it came to fulfilling its promises, to enabling the promises of the covenant, to make us immortal, to make us perfect, to enable God to adopt us into his eternal family, and for him to empower us and enrich us, Yahweh did those things himself. He became the Passover lamb through the diminished corporeal manifestation of his own nature in Yahusha. He then had Yahusha's soul go into the place of separation to redeem us, to make us perfect. And then he unified his spirit with Yahusha's soul on Bukurim. So Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, three successive days to formally issue the adoption paper so that we could be part of his family. And then on seven sevens later, on the celebration of the promise of seven, of Shavuah, Yahweh enriched us with his Torah teaching and empowered us with his spirit. These events were all fulfilled by Yahweh himself in 33 CE, which was year 4000 Yah, enabling all of the promises of the covenant. But other than that, everything else that Yahweh does, he does through us, with us, engaging in this relationship. God is quite normal, quite approachable in this regard. You know, if you have a relationship with your wife or husband, you have a relationship with your children. For that relationship to have any merit, you have to engage. You have to participate. And you can't have one party doing everything and the other party doing nothing. You know, this is this stupid notion of Christianity that salvation is a gift and that we don't do anything. Well, I'm sorry. You know, salvation is a byproduct of the covenant, and you can't participate in the covenant unless you participate. A one-sided relationship is nothing but a drain. It's even for the beneficiary. It's destructive. You know, if you are a net beneficiary, for example, of government handouts, ultimately your character will be destroyed. Your backbone will become weak. You'll have no personal character. All of it becomes destroyed if you get something for nothing. But likewise, if you're the giver in this case, Yahweh, offering us the covenant, offering us its benefits, if he does everything and we do nothing in response, nothing in return, it's terribly draining. It's, you know, I'm sure most of you, I know I did, have unrequited love when, well, it was actually unrequited passion, when in high school and in college, maybe even in junior high, where there was a pretty girl that you thought, boy, we could make beautiful music together, and she didn't think so. I'm talking about from a male perspective, but women probably is the same thing. And the frustration of trying to have a relationship with somebody who's not giving anything back. It's terribly draining. This would be draining from Yahweh if we didn't respond. And, you know, just in a human relationship, we don't want someone just to lie to us and to pretend to say flattering things to us. We want a genuine response, somebody we can rely on, somebody we can live with and let our hair down with and just enjoy life with. That's what God wants. Now, here, this statement is normally translated and says, and I will make you into a great nation. That goyim is a translated nation as opposed to individuals from different races and places. And Asha is translated as make as opposed to act and engage. And Gadol can be translated great, but it means to increase, to build up. And so if you were to take the English translation, and I will make you into a great nation, you realize that he never made Abraham into a great nation, ever. And so as a prophecy, making Abraham a great nation, that didn't occur. Abraham was never a nation. And the descendants of Abraham, ultimately, for a very brief period of time during Dode, they did become a nation. But it wasn't great. A tiny little nation. You know, they won a few skirmishes here and there, but goodness, it's very short-lived, very small in terms of scope. I mean, if you wanted to look at the great civilizations by man's standards, you know, you've got the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Sumerians, the Hittites, the Greeks, the Romans. I mean, there is no time at all when Israel was amongst the most powerful nations on earth, ever. Neither through duration, nor through brevity of power and magnitude of power. Greatness in terms of size, greatness in terms of longevity, greatness in terms of influence and power in the world. Never. So, either we should discard this whole thing because God got it wrong, or English Bibles have it translated wrong. Those are your choices here. So, I'm of the conclusion that that's not what God said, and that's not what the words mean. That it obfuscates the purpose of the covenant. You know, and just think about this for a moment. He's asking Abram to walk away from his country, to walk away from societal influences, to walk away from the human family. And then the reward for doing that, the consequence of doing that, is to turn him into a nation. Be counterproductive. So the purpose of walking away from human entanglements, human institutions, is so that God can enrich us as his children, empowering us as his children. In this case, the offer is to all of us, no matter where we may live or whom we may be related to. That's why goyim was used. Now, as you consider whether or not Abraham became a great nation, there would also be the issue of the fact that he fathered two children. One was Ishmael, by way of an Egyptian slave who was demonstrably excluded from the covenant, and Yishak, by way of his wife Sarah. Apart from his alleged connection to Islam, Ishmael has been lost to time, and he isn't therefore the father of any nation. Now, you could say that since Muslims claim him, but falsely, by the way, there's really no genetic link between Ishmael and Islam, but there is one of religious myth. And certainly Ishmael's promises, the prophecies, speak of those who claim him as their own, who claim that he was the inspiration, the forefather of their religion. So I don't want to diminish that connection. But there really is no nation of Islam. Islam is wholly divided. It's, in fact, God's depiction of the descendants of Ishmael is that their hand would be raised against their brother, and their brother's hand would be raised against them. And they have never been great in terms of making a contribution to the world. They've always been very destructive. Now, if you look at Jacob, who became Yisrael, an heir to the covenant, God would never have used goy in reference to the descendants of Jacob, because the descendants of Jacob, by God's own definition, are Yisrael. So if we're saying that I'm going to make you a great nation, and that great nation is going to be Yisrael, he would have used Yisrael, not goyim. Goy is, by the way, is actually singular in the text. I've been saying goyim, but it is singular in the text, excluding the idea that the covenant's patriarch fathered multiple nations, and therefore the notion of making Abram a great nation must be rejected. The comment would be to to people from different races and places. Yeah, the covenant is an individual affair. I think part of why God has goy actually written here in the singular, not the plural, is that while goy does apply to all of those, everyone on earth, regardless of our race or our place of birth or our time of birth, we come to the covenant not as a nation, not as a institutionalized group of people. We come to the covenant and to God individually. The path is single file. And so if you want to be adopted into God's family, You need to come in as a singular individual. Now, the family is collective. There are many of us who enjoy kinship with Yahweh. We all came to Yahweh individually, which is perhaps why it is written in the singular. Now, the operative verb, ashah, is a Hebrew word denoting work, but it doesn't have a connotation of, you know, work is toilsome. It means to act, to engage, to do something that is productive. So since Yahweh is speaking with Abraham, God is promising to work through, to engage with, to act in conjunction with, to do everything that is required to achieve the objective, to accomplish the task, to produce the desired result, and then to celebrate what has been accomplished. All of that is communicated through Ashah. Further, while Goy, people, is usually translated Gentile and may be rendered nation, its primary meaning depicts people from every race and place on earth. And that makes Gadol to increase and magnify the operative concept of this text, the objective, the desired result of this engagement with Abram. Well, welcome to the last segment of Shattering Mist for today. We're going to consider the last word in this expressive comment from Yahweh. It is Gadol. Gadol describes growth, which is the residue of the covenant for both God and man. Most people are uncomfortable with the idea of God growing. They want to see God as infinite. But God can only be infinite if he grows. That which doesn't grow ceases to be infinite. The very definition of infinite requires continual growth. The moment something ceases to grow, it becomes finite. No matter how big something is, if it ceases to grow, it becomes finite. The only way for God's nature to be infinite, to be to expand forever into space-time, is God has to grow. And so if you look at it, being that capable of creating the universe and of conceiving life and of authoring the Torah and of providing the covenant, how would such a being grow? And not this commercial break, but the previous one, we were talking during the entire break about the best job in the world. The best job in the world, I think, is being a dad. Now, I'm sure that my wife would challenge that and say the best job in the world is being a mom. But, you know, from my perspective, the best job in the world is being a dad. I love the job of being a dad. Love my sons. Love the time that we spend together. The absolute happiest time in my life was when both of my sons moved back in the in a house. We bought a house on the West Coast. Especially because both of our sons were transferring to schools on the West, and we had the opportunity as to have them back in our home as young adults. And, oh, man, was it fun. Just so rewarding doing things together with adult sons. Best job in the world. I grew tremendously. Now, that wasn't my purpose. It was just the result, the outcome of engaging with my sons in a family setting, in a home, and doing things together, was that we all grew through that experience. Best job in the world. Most rewarding job in the world. It's how God grows. The covenant is how God grows. Yes, he's giving, providing us with all the benefits of the covenant, enabling us to grow, enabling us to be perfect, enabling us to be immortal, enriching us with his teaching, empowering us with his spirit. Sure, God is giving us a lot. He's contributing in enormous amounts to it. But our participation in the covenant, as flawed and feeble as we may be, brings God pleasure. And it's that pleasure, it's those shared experiences that cause God to be more than he would be without these relationships. We all help him grow just as he helps us grow, the very nature of families. It's why throughout the millennia, men and women have come together as husband and wife and then as father and mother to conceive and raise children in a loving home environment. It's the longest running story of humankind. And it's for a reason. There's no laws that require it. It's not ordered. It's not mandated. It's something that we do because there is nothing that we can do that is more enjoyable, more rewarding, more beneficial than that. God conceived us in such a way that we could grow from the very thing that causes him to grow. So in this regard, when Yahweh says that he is responding and engaging and acting upon this opportunity to form a family, when we reciprocate and do the same, we gain all of the benefits. Now, before we press on to the next statement, it is instructive to recognize, as I highlighted previously, that a Shah was scribed in the call and perfect cohortative. I want to reinforce this because it reveals the answer to the statement, to a question that could be asked based upon Yahusha's Sermon on the Mount. And the conclusion that if you want to end up in heaven, those who end up in heaven are those who act upon the will of the Father. The cohortative here tells us that engaging in this relationship with Yahweh is the will of the Father. So it's engaging in this relationship that has us in sync with the will of the Father. And Ashah is a term that speaks of acting upon and engaging with. And so it's the direct answer to how you end up in heaven. You act upon and engage upon the will of the Father, which is for us to participate in this relationship. And as I mentioned before, the imperfect conjugation means that when we do so, there are ongoing benefits that unfold throughout time that are never ending. And the call stem says, you can take this to the bank. This is literally true. God's intent here is genuine and actual. That should be our response. I look forward to continuing with Shattering Myths at this time tomorrow. May God bless you all.